And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. So, Patty Quatro, you're on the road with your band, The Pleasure Seekers, and manager Leo Fenn, and we're heading to New York City to go to Trudy Heller so that Joe Glazier from ABC can see you guys live, because he's completely intrigued. But I'm just, in terms of logistics, you said, plural, that you drove to New York in cars. We know it's your Pleasure Seekers van. We know it's the U-Haul. Did Leo drive separately? Did other adults accompany you? I'm curious.
You know, the memory is dim, but I'm positive we had to have two cars because we couldn't all fit in the van and Leo and just have the one car with the van. So obviously there were two. I'm sure that Leo handled the van because of the trailer and all that. And probably one of us drove the other car and we piggybacked, you know, and drove to New York. That would have been the logical memory. I'm pretty sure.
Well, you had mentioned in a previous episode that you and the band now needed roadies. You couldn't just flirt your way to have guys pick up the equipment and take it inside. Right. So did you have a roadie on this trip? Was it who you mentioned before, Martin Priest? Was it the nameless guy who ran down Mack Avenue screaming to a bus, Dickie, Dickie, Dickie? I'm just curious, who accompanied you? Who was your entourage?
I don't remember Martin being there yet, because I think we were looking after the costs and we had to pay a Gorham hotel and blah, blah, blah. I think Leo just handled unloading or whoever was at the club to help. I think we were going to be in one spot. So I think that that's how we did it. I don't remember having to get another expensive room in New York City for a roadie, which we would have had to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, of course you would have had to. And I just want to remind the listeners, for those that are not keeping up with every single episode and all the lineup changes of the Pleasure Seekers, this moment in time, your band, as you're heading to New York, it's you, Arlene and Susie, the Quattro girls. You have
Right.
Eileen Bidling-Meyer, aka Lady Godiva, and you have Darlene Dar Arnone or Dar Thumper. And I'm just curious how you're feeling. You're about to arrive in the Big Apple. Again, you've been booked by Joe Glazier, who wants to see you. You mentioned in the previous episode that Trudy Heller's at that point in Greenwich Village was already the hot spot for glitterati and all the famous people
Yes.
that went there. And so I'm just curious about there you are, you've left Michigan, you're driving through, and you get to the city. What was that like for you, Patty? Would you have any moments? Did you squeal? Did you cry? Did you clap? Or is that just me? Nope.
We didn't do that. We were all very excited. We couldn't believe we were going to be signing with a top agency, probably. I mean, that was our dream. And playing in the hottest spot in New York City, that blew our minds that they put that together so quickly, him and Joe. It was just amazing. Joe pulled strings and told Trudy, get this band, So, and Susie had the most hilarious introduction to New York City. I talk sometimes about our penis stories. There we are, Susie with her bass case, and we're walking down one of the main drags. I don't know if it was Broadway or what. And all of a sudden, here comes this guy, this big dude, and he has his penis out and he's wanking off, just strolling down the avenue. With no thought that he was, nude, his penis was hanging out. And Susie's eyes bugged out of her head. That was her introduction to New York City.
Okay, well, first of all, you just took my breath away because I don't know about any other listeners out there, and I can't even get this out. Patty, you have never used the expression, well, you know all of our penis stories.
We have a couple more coming.
Well, stay tuned, everyone. And so that is Susie's introduction. Her eyes bug out. Was Leo there? What did he try to do?
Just Susie and I walking, strolling down. I don't know what I did. I was watching her, but her eyes were ready to pop out of her head. She couldn't believe it. He
Yes.
was so nonchalant. He was just wanking off.
And welcome to New York.
Anything can happen.
Oh, that's hilarious. And so when you get there and you've arrived and you now see all the colorful characters roaming around New York, tell us what it was like when you arrived. Did you check into your hotel? Did you then go do a sound check? Did you stay there for the night? I'm just the logistics of this I'm curious about. So where did you stay? Tell us about the hotel. How far was it from Trudy Heller's? Anything you want to share?
It was a little bit of a ride because Trudy's was in the village and we were right in the center of town. I think it was 55th Street. I mean, I can look up the address. It is a famous music hotel. Every rock star has stayed there, I would guess.
What was the name?
Gorham Hotel. And it was full of, you could smell reefer in the halls. I mean, it was just that kind of a music hotel. And there are some amazing stories of little shenanigans that went on there with us and other international bands. It was something, and it was popping.
The only reason why I'm not stopping the entire episode now so that you can tell us about these hotel hijinks is because I just want everybody to know that this is your first trip as the Pleasure Seekers to New York. Because
Yes, our
this
first
is
one.
your first one. This is Joe Glazier, who has not even seen you live, but he's interested. He picks up the phone to Trudy Heller, books you there, and this is what that gig is. So, all the stories about the hotel stuff that goes on, and maybe even more penis stories, dare I get excited enough? I think actually there were. I think it
So
was.
bad. You're so bad. You always want the dirt.
I do. Spill the little black book. Come on. But again, I just want to remind people that this is, it's almost, I mean, is it one night that you're there? Is it two nights that you're there, max? It's just to do this one gig for the first time.
Yes. And what was interesting to us was, in New York City, we didn't know anything about it. I had been there when I was a young kid with my parents when they took us on a trip, but I'm older now. And I noticed there was like a restaurant of every nationality on every block. And it was an interesting way to live. All the apartments were above, and people could go down and get their food from whatever restaurant they wanted. It was just set up so cool. We could walk anywhere and get any kind of food we wanted. And oh, it was amazing. It was,
I
we
love
came
that.
into the hotel first. I know we did. We went to the hotel, checked in, and then we went over and set up our equipment and did sound check, I'm sure. That would be our routine.
So you did sound check. Usually that would be, and I don't mean to put words into your mouth, probably the afternoon, right before, as the disco is getting ready to open up. And so during this time, during the sound check, did you meet Trudy Heller or was she there yet?
I don't remember meeting her. No, we may have. I'm not sure that she didn't come in more at night. She had her team doing everything. She was very involved in her clubs. You know, she had more than one. And she might have been there, but I don't remember meeting her at that point. I think we got our equipment in, did our sound check, and went back to the hotel, had dinner, and got ready.
So what was that like after the sound check? I mean, now it's getting real, as they say, and you go back to the hotel room and you have dinner and you're gearing up now, pun intended and not pun intended, to have this performance, which really, I mean, without making this hyperbolic, could be life-changing for the band. This is the
Absolutely.
moment. And so talk about what these hours were like at the hotel, during dinner, getting ready. Talk about your anything nerdy going on, costuming, nerves, anything.
Lily had made us a black sequin mini dress. And you know, we didn't favor minis, but we were going to New York City. So she made us a short little mini dress that was form-fitting. It's in the pictures. And boots. Of course, black boots. You know, credit to Nancy Sinatra. You know, our boots were always made for walking, you know. So we had boots with a lot of costumes. So that's what we wore for the first gig. I'm sure we were excited. Arlene and Leo would have been in their room, you know, and the rest of us girls just futzing around. But we knew our routine. We just had to get ready and get over there. We were excited to get there because we'd heard about all the dancers that they had on the walls next to the stage, and they had, you can't see it in our PR picture, but there was a handle on the wall because if the dancers didn't hold on to the handle, they would fall onto a table that was in front of them. They had to move only side to side, not backwards and forwards, or they would fall off the little tiny ledge where we took those pictures. It was amazing. Everything was crammed in, and we had this little triangle in the corner, you know, for our equipment.
Oh, well, and for the listeners, the costumes you're talking about and the pictures that we're going to be showing, this is at Trudy Heller's that first night when you're auditioning basically for Joe Glazer in your black sequin mini dresses and your black boots. And now that photo and that moment is iconic. Patty, it's so cool. So I want you to now set the stage. You walk in these black sequins mini dresses and your boots. It's 1967. It's your spring break. First of all, were you on the bill by yourself? Were you playing with other people? I know you said there's music going on, there's go-go dancing and all of that, but I just want you to make it as vivid for us as possible. You know, this is no longer sweaty, what is it? Teens in a sweatbox, horny teens in a sweatbox. It might be horny grown-ups in a sweatbox. So tell us now, it's no longer the hideout.
I'm glad you just said that because I was going to compare. We had our horny teen sweatbox at the hideout, and this was another huge horny sweatbox because it was just like that. It was like a circus, loud and raucous, and they had tables everywhere in the front, like a nightclub, and then everybody would dance where they could in the back. People were bopping around. We didn't have a dressing room. We had to change in the bathroom with all the hairspray smelling. Oh my God, could get sick from the smell, but it was amazing. It was very energetic. She was a tough cookie, Trudy, but she had a real warm heart. She ran it like, oh my God, with an iron hand, the way she ran it. And she loved her dancers, loved the atmosphere. She wanted it to rock. And that's what she made us do. She did not like ballads. So our set lists were with a lot of upbeat stuff. You know, that's what we had to do. That's what she wanted.
Well, I
And
just
we
want to
had.
clarify, Patty. Sorry to interrupt you. You said you don't remember meeting her, but so was that a directive that you got from her, or did you meet her later that night? How did you know that that's what she wanted musically?
We got to find out. The dancers were very gossipy. They were very friendly. A lot of them were gay, and they were just, "Oh, we love you, and oh, your fashions." And, I mean, they were so cute. Young kids, and they were the dancers. But they informed us about Trudy. They warned us she'll flick the lights if you're not playing rock enough. If you do a ballad, she's going to flick the lights on you, and she might yell out, "Get rocking, get rocking." I mean, that was Trudy. She just wanted it a certain way and to stay exciting in the club. We got to know her pretty well. We did meet her at night, obviously, and she was really sweet with us, real welcoming and excited to have this girl band. So I don't know what Joe said to her, but he sold it.
Well, that's what I'm curious about the chronology. So you're performing, the lights did not get flicked on you because you're playing hard rock. And we know that since Joe Glazer picked up the phone personally to Trudy Heller and said, "Book the pleasure seekers," we know he's in the audience. Thank you, Le Leo Fenn, and his amazing pitch. So he wanted to see you live, Joe. Did you meet him before the performance or after the performance?
No, I don't remember meeting him at all. I think he floated in at some point. He was like a straight businessman, even though he had his mob connections. He would look like an older man and, whatever. He wasn't trying to be some kind of hipster or anything. He was running a top agency. So he was there, and I don't even remember if Leo sat with him or, met him or what. I'm sure they did at a table, maybe more toward the back so he could hear the sound good, wanted to see what we were all about. And to tell you the truth, we were so involved in our performance. We knew all this was going on behind the scene, but it was the attitude of the band, get up there and leave it on the stage. And that was always what we were focused on. So honestly, we probably didn't pay much attention to him, didn't even know who he was, but he was there to see us. We know that because it all happened afterwards.
I so admire your professionalism and your just steadfast focus on what you were there to do. I mean, this is so serious, Patty. I love it. But I'm a former performer myself. I'm not saying I'm you, but did you have nerves as you're waiting in the wings? Did you wonder how the audience was going to receive you? As you said, put it all out there on the stage. And your band at this point was professional enough. You were touring and gigging all over. But was there ever a moment of, can we pull this off?
No, I have to be honest, there wasn't. I was always serious Patty, the band leader, and I knew we could pull it off. I knew it. Of course, I might have been like, "Oh my God, we're in New York City," the excitement of that next step that was coming. But I mean, Susie, the show off that she was, she couldn't wait to jump on a table so she was seen, I mean, that's Susie, yeah, let me at it, and she did. I mean, you could see in the pictures, she jumped on one of the tables. Those poor people.
Well, just to clarify, her jumping on the table was this performance, March 67 at Trudy Heller's?
I think she did it earlier because she was already getting to be known in the Michigan area, Susie Soul. And she grabbed that top hat. I'm trying to remember when she did that, whether it was at the Rooster Tail with Paul Revere or one of the earlier gigs where she jumped on a table. She couldn't wait to distinguish herself, and she did. So she did jump on a table in New York City many times.
Well,
Oh,
again,
geez.
that's another continuing of stories that we will get to. But yes, she was Susie Soul, so clarify this for me. And then you had Eileen was Lady Godiva, you had Dar Thumper, and your Patty Pleasure. So how did Susie Soul take off, whereas the other band nicknames for you didn't take off?
It's very organic because at that time we were trading vocal duties, okay? Around the band. You got to remember at Trudy's, we had to do six sets a night, 45-minute sets with a half-hour break in between to go in the bathroom and change or whatever. And I can't tell you how tough that gig was. And that's what she expected. We had never played that long of a show before. So we would do three sets or four sets, and then we had to repeat one and two late in the morning, the last ones. And a lot of people stayed right through. I mean, it was so popular. But
Well, that's what
That's
I was going
what
to
we
ask.
had to do. And we had, I remember we had this medicine, the green stuff in a bottle. I forget the name of it. Susie lost her voice a couple times, you know, and we're always spraying that stuff to get through the night and not, you know, be able to sing. But we all took turns and we had to. You couldn't have somebody singing six sets all on their own.
Was it chloraseptic? Is that the name of
Yeah, probably. That sounds familiar. We had
it?
it in our hotel room and the luggage everywhere.
Well, it's funny because now you have a connection with Van Halen because I will never forget the David Lee Roth, whenever he lost his voice from, not that you guys were drinking whiskey or whatever he was drinking, and that's what they would spray into his mouth. But yes, that's a long old trick. But you were saying Susie's soul happened organically just because of
She
the
was
music.
because she became more of a front person as time goes on. You know, we didn't always play Trudy's. We played regular gigs where it was like one or two sets or even one set on a festival. And, you know, it was usually her songs. And that just happened organically that she took the front, especially with the changing lineups, because Susie was the better singer. You know, I took a few songs. Eileen, when she was gone, Pammy was a different kind of singer. Darlene had a couple songs, but Susie was really the front person by then as time went on. So it happened naturally. It just rolled out.
Well, you're talking about Pammy Bedford, Pammy the Bird, and we're not there
Yes.
yet.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet. But I want to get back to this first night at Trudy Heller's because my head is spinning. I still have so many questions for you. And the part of the reason why my head is spinning is because you and I know that there is still so much more to come for the pleasure seekers. This is only your first
Yeah.
gig at Trudy Heller's. And so you said you don't even remember meeting Joe Glazer, but immediately upon this performance in New York, ABC signs you and he takes you under his wing personally. So I'm curious if you could tell me the details of how this all came about. Did you meet with him the next day? Did Leo come and say, "Great news"? How did it happen?
He told Leo that night that he had big plans for us. And as I said, he personally took us on, which was amazing for the director of the company to do that, you know. And Leo had to call the parents and get permission, you know, to sign us and all that. All the parents were excited. They were right on board. We had no problem. And it happened so quickly. We were signed. That was it. And he started booking immediately.
So he signs you immediately. He starts booking you immediately. So do you leave New York the next morning?
No. We somehow during that time that we were at Trudy's, he went to his office and took care of all that business stuff. That was Leo's domain. You know, we were trying to sleep till noon. I mean, you know, after the gig, we would go to the Stage Deli, which was the place to have our late breakfast in the middle of the morning. And we would go home and sleep until noon when we had to start the whole thing all over again. So Leo had to handle the business stuff. We didn't even concern ourselves. Our parents had to say yes. We were teenagers.
It's just, it really just continues this magical musical fairy tale. It's just amazing. Well, you briefly mentioned that Trudy obviously liked you because she didn't flash the lights and she encouraged you again. Am I getting that correctly? Because her response, in a way, didn't matter. It was Joe Glazer's response. But yet,
Yeah.
Joe would have to call her again and say, book them. So, was she on board?
She was totally on board. She loved the band. She thought we were fantastic. She later had a nickname for Susie. She had a crush on her. You know, she was a ballsy, cool woman, you know, a businesswoman. She even put on concerts and stuff. I mean, amazing. She had quite a legacy. Anyway, she wanted us back. Absolutely. By the end of the gig, she wanted us back. And we played every one of her clubs. So it was
Patty,
a beautiful relationship. Yeah.
it just sounds like it. And I'm smiling right now because not only is this a groundbreaking all-female rock and roll band, you now have these amazing women surrounding you as well. You have Lily Weaver, you have a Trudy Heller. You know, yes, you have a Leo Fenn, and you have your father, and you have your brother, but I just love the fact that you are being embraced and that they are recognizing your talents. I mean, this is happening so fast. This is, I want to say, almost an overnight success. I mean, it's 2.5 years that you formed as a band. It wasn't even close to 3 years. And now you're signed with Joe at ABC. Trudy Heller has opened up her doors to you, and you're heading back from the Big Apple to the Motor City with this now life-changing experience for you personally and professionally. And I'm just wondering, as you're driving home, what are you thinking about?
I've talked about our attitude before, and doing this New York gig, again, I will say for us, it was the empowering of female musicians in that era. Our big thing wasn't, it was being in New York, but it also was, we're going to make their mouths hang open, showing what women could play like. And that's how we felt when we walked on that stage in Trudy's all the times that we were there. We just wanted to make their jaws drop. We got a kick out of that, amidst all the other excitement, of being in the Big Apple and all that. So,
I'm curious the goal of having their mouths drop open. So that first gig at Trudy Heller's that night, clearly their mouths dropped open. But did it take long? Was there that moment of people going, "What am I seeing?"
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, it's funny because I don't remember the exact set. We did all the hits of the day, all the English stuff, the American stuff, whatever it was. But I think we must have opened with the Motown Revue because it was so impressive. We traded all the way around instruments and singers, and they probably were standing there with their mouths open because who saw women do that, I'm sure that, and then we repeated that set later, in the middle of the morning. So I'll bet that was what we opened with.
Night for some tender arms to hold me.